This edition of Trail Runner Nation brought to you by Ultra Running Magazine. And I have Michelle Barton with me, and she told me of a fond childhood memory she had regarding Ultra Running Magazine. Michelle?
Yes, for my Christmas present every year, my dad would give me a subscription renewal to Ultra Runner Magazine.
Is that right? Did he leave it in the tree in the stocking, or did you unwrap it under the as a present?
I just unwrapped it. It was beautifully wrapped, and I was so happy. But, you know, that was back in the day before they had all this online stuff. That's the only way you could kind of, like, get proper race results, and you were so excited to see your friends and photos in the magazine. 15 years ago, it was a black and white cover with Don Allison as publisher, and now it's changed. And it's much more modern and amazing.
And it
and
is.
You should
great.
Keep subscribing.
Go to Trail Runner Nation, go to our partners page, and link on over to get the Trail Runner Nation deal from Ultra Running Magazine. On this podcast, we talk a lot about running long, and we talk about the problems that arise, like gut bombs, things that can crash a race, take a race and just destroy it. And many times it comes from nutrition or lack of electrolytes or just some kind of mismanagement during your race. But the great thing about Tailwind Nutrition is it gives you all the calories, all the electrolytes, everything you need right there in a single scoop. Michelle.
I love how it mixes so easily. Two scoops in your bottle or your flask, shake it in, you're down the trail or the road. I love the green tea flavor a lot, too.
You know what? We would fight for the same flavor at the aid station table. Green tea is my favorite.
And yeah, you'd lose.
Well, you'd be there first, naturally. So I just would appreciate it if you'd leave a little for me.
So I'm good at sharing, so that can work.
Go to Trail Runner Nation. Click on the partners page. Go to Tailwind Nutrition and link on over for Tailwind Nutrition.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of the wide, worldwide ultra running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast with me, a complete imposter here in London, England, and your two real hosts over there with a skeleton behind them very early morning in the studio. It's Scott and Dom.
All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
There's a bunch of old brothel hookers buried out here.
But I know it's on the upper edge and you guys have won a couple of awards. And
I've never prepped for a podcast ever.
Oh, that's what you're doing.
Okay, we'll clear that up. The group of the nation and podcast downloaders are very sophisticated.
They are.
They're unlike any other group out there. They're tolerant. They ignore our many imperfections, and they'll be able to substitute the word. No problem.
They will.
All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Don Freeman. And that pause there is because Scott Warr is in the mountains with a backpack, climbing up and down hills and keeping his heart rate low. He's a endurance athlete that's taken from the trail to the backpacking scene for this weekend. And Michelle Barton is also on the line. She decided to somehow hijack this show. She says, Scott's not here. I'm going to take over as host. I'm going to bring my friend Mayo on, and we're going to talk trail running. So we voted on it. Scott was silent. I voted, and she voted, and here we are doing a show. So, Michelle Barton, you take over all complaints. If you have a complaint, send it to her. We'll get you her email address and Scott's show notes. And any compliments that you have, because you may have liked the show, go ahead and send them our direction over here. I'll read those. Michelle, take it over. Introduce us to Mayo, and tell us what's going on.
Hi, I want to introduce you guys to one of my teammates and friends, Mayo Cernik. Mayo grew up in Slovakia. He's been a rock climber for 30 years and moved to Canada 16 years ago, where he took up ultra running about 5 years ago. His first 100-mile was, his first ultra was a 24-hour race. So he just jumped right into it. He kind of loves the beauty and the simplicity of running and loves that longer distance. Basically, his first 200 miler was the one that you ran with him, Don, and that was Tahoe, September 9th.
Yeah, I think we saw each other somewhere between the 9th and the 13th. You know, during that duration, it was a long race.
Yeah. Absolutely. Only thing I remember, by the way, hi guys, was you was running like into me and screaming, "Dude, you gotta get those burritos. They are awesome." That's the only thing I remember from it.
Is that right? You know, it was a long race, and there's just only a few things that you can really recall. But I remember advertising that burrito to as many people that wanted to listen. I remember that, Mayo. That's good. Yeah. Did you have one?
Yeah, that was. Did yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, I
got everything in that point, man.
Mayo, I think got burnt out on burritos because when we were in Mexico, he wanted no part of that.
Well, you know,
we've got a lot of ground to cover here, and I'm gonna jump in and say, Mayo, you're gonna introduce yourself to long distance running, and your first long race is a 24-hour race. I mean. What were you thinking?
Well, I wasn't thinking much back then. That was just the way I started. But you know, like I start running around, and I love running, I guess. And I kind of felt like I having good kick out of it, and I was somehow progressing fairly quick. From that 7K to 20K and 30K and that kind of stuff, and then I got a bunch of like injuries coming out and pains and all that stuff. So one friend of mine said, "You gotta read Born to Run book because, like, Born to Run, you know, there is a like a barefoot running basically, and seems like that book help a lot of people help with the injury and they find a new way of running, I guess." So anyway, I read a book and it's all about ultra running, and that idea of like running long was just like was totally inspiring. Like I had no idea what I'm doing. I just started searching ultra races around here in Canada, or better say Alberta, and everything was sold out because that's how it is here. You gotta be quick, and this 24-hour race was still up there, was still space, so I just enter, and me and my buddy, we went and run it. So my first race ever in life, I run 140K, so almost 100 miles in one shot.
Wow. Hey, Michelle, let's talk. Is it okay if we talk about that particular subject? Because I really want to hear about the experience of a guy thinking, well, I can't get into a race. They seem to be all filled up, but there's a spot left in a 24-hour race. How did you plan for it? What did you experience? You sign up, you put your bib on, and you get at the front of the line. What was your plan going in, and then what happened?
Well, I didn't have a plan back then. I was just, I wasn't racing at all. I was just really wondering how far I can run in that 24 hours thing. And also, like, I have to say, that was a trail race. We was running 5K loop on the trail, so it was a forest and up and down. And over 24 hours, we climbed, like, pretty good amount of vertical. That wasn't on the track or anything like that. So that was partially, you know, kind of cool, like, you're running forest all night and then all day. And I didn't have a plan. I wasn't there racing at all. I was just walking and running much I could. And, like, to me, that very very ultra I run, I was thinking, like, I actually kind of have to run it. I wasn't ready for walking that much. Like, I didn't know that's a part of the game. I just later on I realized, like, oh, people walking hills, so, you know, sooner or later you're walking too. But we run a lot with my buddy. The first, I don't know, like 5 hours was a lot of running, and then finally run out of juice and start to be a little bit of smarter, and we started to talk to people because there was probably 50 people running 24, and then morning 7 they start people who was running 12 hours, and then later on start people who was running 6 hours event. So there was in one point probably like, I don't know, 60 people running around, and it was great social event. I made a lot of friends, and I kind of, like, to me being in that, like, a rock climbing society back then or culture, this was very similar. Like a lot of friendship right away, and a lot of ideas was born, and we was wondering about another races, how they are and all that stuff. So that was a good entry into ultras for sure, and no pressure because you just run in 24 hours how much you can, so you can really like DNF, you know, you just do best you can.
How far did you think you were going to run when you signed up? Do you have any idea, or do you, whatever happens, happens, or did you have a goal?
Well, I was, after reading a book, and seems like there is some sort of a pride when you manage to run 100 miles in sub 24 hours. So, course being not that, like, a super lot of climbs and stuff, I was kind of trying to get that 100 miles in 24 if possible, and I was shy like 20k of it. Like, you guys live in the States, that would be like 10 miles or something. Mm-hmm. 12 miles probably. So I was close, but man, like, I was done in so many levels. Next day when I went get a gas for my car, I couldn't walk just to go out of the car and get a gas in. Like, that was just brutal. Yeah.
Michelle?
Yeah.
I've kind of hijacked your show. You were supposed to be leading the way here, and I feel like I've got the baton, and I've not given it to you.
So since that race, Mayo's done the Jungle Ultra 250K. This will be his fourth Sinister 7. He's run Lost Soul 100 a couple times, Blackspur, few races in the States like Javelina. And his big race this year is UTMB. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. But, you know, like, I started running and I wasn't competing on it or anything like that. It was just pure fun. And I was posting stuff on Instagram and social media, kind of progress. Even my website, if you will, says from zero to ultra because I was just trying to, document what's possible from zero to ultra, and I was posting pictures and all that stuff. So back then, Vivo barefoot, because I was running in the barefoot shoes pretty quickly, like, I realized that's the way to go for me, and they said, yeah, like, you're running in our shoes, and we would like you to go represent kind of Vivo barefoot in the jungle and in Peru 30 days from now. I'm like, 30 days, you know. So, yeah, that was a good race. Great, great experience.
So tell me about the transition to barefoot and why you're such an advocate about that.
Well, that worked for me. Like, I had a pains and I was feeling broken with the big miles. I just, like, it didn't go. You know, like, when you're having some sort of a sore muscle, I can work with that because that's where we're going for. Like, that's the training. That's what you're looking for. Break a muscle, make it stronger, you go. But when I'm running 40K and my joints are popping out of the sockets, I just knew, like, I'm doing something wrong. And barefoot running very quickly was a good fix because I have to go back to the basic and check my form and work from there. So I slowed down and my mileage went back down and everything was kind of like, I got nothing to lose, really. You know, I wasn't going for anything big. It's just I was looking for painless running, and farther as I can go, that's what I take, right?
So yeah, and you found that in barefoot. And, like, so that's been 3 years, basically. And right now, can
like
run barefoot, like, completely. And now mostly, majority running in Luna sandals when it's conducive to the Canadian, you know, temps
and
stuff.
Well, we got a long winter, so I have to go. Vivo barefoot shoes are... just make sure my toes doesn't freeze in the winter, but it's more or less the same style of running. Yeah.
I would get a question because you guys say barefoot. When I think barefoot, I think of me in the shower. I think nothing on my feet, but you're talking about Luna sandals and Viva barefoot. Help me out. Help me out with the barefoot versus something on your feet and still calling it barefoot.
Okay. Well, the barefoot to me represents something where you can move as a barefoot when you move like a human to be moving naturally. So you're wearing footwear what protect your feet against cold, against, I don't know, sharp objects stabbing you in the bottom of your feet, but you're still moving basically barefoot, if that makes any sense. Because, like, imagine, like, I'm running on the pavement and I'm barefoot, so even the pavement being a hard surface, but it's consistent, and I learn my body to adapt to that consistent, like a pavement running style, right? So if I put on Luna sandals, it's slightly softer maybe, but it's still dense rubber. It's hard rubber, and it's very consistent ride. So once you adapt your body to that kind of running, it's super consistent, and yeah, it works for me because you get like your toes have a place to go, like the ankles are moving properly. There is no heel striking involved. There is natural movement basically. So that's what barefoot it's about to me. But yeah, some people take it literally, and yeah, I can run barefoot in Rocky Mountains here. That would just be distractible.
Right, but on occasion, you run actually barefoot. Like, I guess one day you had like an hour or so in between work, and it was basically no shoes, no problem. I'm just going to ditch these boots and go running for half marathon.
I run barefoot much I can on the pavement. There is no problem. Actually, I like to do that because when I'm racing 100 milers or even 200 miler in the sandals, it's nice to prepare your feet a little bit for it, right? So
right,
running on the running on the pavement, it make the skin on the bottom a little more tougher and all that stuff, and then feeling in the sandals, it's just like different. It's kind of nice to run on that kind of stuff. That
right. And yes.
Go ahead, Michelle.
I was just going to ask Mayo, talk about, you know, when you're first, I would say maybe transitioning into the Lunas or barefoot style, and how, say, you go for a 10K run, but it feels like a 25K because, you know, it's like you told me, a gym for your feet. You're making your everything, your tendons, your ligaments, your bones, like it's going to be stronger, and you can see the definition coming out more on your calves, on your, you know, just like just better, healthier for you overall.
Yeah, well, that's my way of running. Like, I'm not, you know, nothing against the shoes or anything. Like, to me, key, like, the king, it's the run, right? So all of us looking for running, and we look for to be successful, whatever that means. You want to run long or you want to run fast. So whatever works for you, it's great. That's the key, right? I wouldn't say somebody, you're happy in the shoes, you're doing well, and now you got to go to some barefoot footwear or run even barefoot, literally. Like, there is no point fix what not broken. But like what training represents, it's some sort of a stimulus for your muscles. So you're running or long distances slower, or you're running fast distances, and I mean the fast pace but shorter distances. Like, you try to break the muscle eventually. That's what you're looking for, right?
Right.
So when people tell me, like, dude, I'm running in the shoes and I can run 30K, no problem, and then I'm running in the sandals and after 10K, I'm done. Like, my legs are toasted, right? Well, like, to me, I'm not a professional athlete. I have no 8 hours to train. So if I can break my muscle in the 10K in 1 hour, great. I take that. I have to run less to get the same effect, like, go for a 3 hours long run. That makes sense to you guys?
Exactly.
And eventually you're getting stronger out of it, even running like less miles. Like, I can look at my Strava, whatever, but last year I was probably averaging 50 to 60K leading up to 100 miler, and then I finished fourth place. So,
yeah, pretty low miles considering, like, that's not what average kind of, like, the ultra runners always want to bang miles, 100 mile weeks leading up to their 100, and you did it on 50K a week.
Yeah, but I didn't win. So, but, you know, I'm still kind of around that front pack chasing
the guys.
Well, you
were fourth. Yeah.
yeah, that's standing right behind the podium. In case somebody falls off, you're, like, ready there to jump on the podium. So fourth is strong. Yeah. Hey, I've got a comment to make. I know when I transitioned from just being probably a heel striker, admittedly, because I saw some pictures that I've tried to hire a company to somehow sanitize that off the internet completely. Me with a full-on heel strike and smiling. It's like, what is that? So I noticed that when I went to a 4-foot strike and a shorter gait, that all of a sudden my calves and different muscles that I wasn't used to using would just become very, very sore. It felt like I was just beat up because I was using muscle to absorb the impact instead of landing on a joint and letting the joint just absorb everything. So I found that transition to be real that you're talking about.
Mm. But again, there is a lot of heel strikers out there, and they are very fast and they are very efficient and they have no problems. So I wouldn't, necessarily judge like a heel strike to be a good or bad, but like you want to get closer to that 180, 175 cadence. And when you run that, it's hard to actually heel strike because it's not very possible. But even the Kenyans running marathon and running fast, they seems like they're going to land on their heel because they have a long flight, but it's very midfoot strike when they land, at least majority what I notice.
Yeah, good point.
I was working with the guy, coaching kind of these things lately, and I was working with the guy who is actually a soccer player, and I couldn't believe how hard was try to get rid of his heel strike. Like, he's running perfectly on fast speed because, like, soccer is that kind of, like, impulsive, like, hard effort for a short period of time, so he was running beautifully fast. But when it comes to that slow running, like, you know, I take him barefoot around the block, and he was like, boom, flop, just like, dude, why are you heel striking? Well, I don't know what to do. I don't know any better. And then we figured it out eventually. But I would think the brain gonna kick in and stop that because it hurts. But it was just so deeply in brain in that mitochondria, the way he ran was super hard to stop that. Michelle?
Yeah, Mayo, you're good at analyzing strides, and you told me I had a few problems with mine that I tried to fix and things like that. But I'm constantly working on yours.
Yeah.
Huh? Hey, Mayo, let's call Michelle out on her biggest issue with her stride. What does she need to work on? I want to know.
I don't know. I didn't have her on the treadmill, but when we was last time running, which was where? Mexico. That was actually much, much better. She increased the cadence. I remember that. She was smiling all that race. That was great. But when we run Sinister or Javelina even, like she's sticky. She got a long flight and sticky stride, you know?
Like
a lot of time on the ground. Yeah, overstriding. But how many races did you win, right?
Right.
No, there you go. This is the thing.
And
like,
you're never injured either, so that's like there's something to that. And can you talk about that like free energy return you were telling me about when you're running barefoot?
Well, this is not my brain talking. Last year I was in the Prague, and I tried to be the barefoot coach because I felt like I figured it out on my own kind of thing, and I want to send this message further, but I couldn't really find way how to do it. It's like if you're asking a child how to walk, right? The child know how to walk but doesn't know how to explain it. So there is a guy in London, Lee Saxby, amazing guy, 30 years of work with biomechanics and running mechanics and all these kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I went there to basically become a barefoot running coach. So we was talking about a lot of stuff, and there is a balance between ligaments and the muscle. And when you're running proper cadence, you have a lot of free energy from the bounce. Like if you imagine you jumping a rope and you are jumping fast, you're pretty bouncy. But if you start jumping slow, then it becomes super tough, hard work. Like you feel eventually you tired, right? So this is the same when it comes to the running, and yeah, improving the form, it's probably the best thing you can do. And it's just so logical to me. Like, we're willing to run harder and do hill repeats and run more miles, and like we're willing to go super far to get to be better runners. But such a thing, like just improving your form when you don't have to do anything extra, and people have issues with that. They don't want to go that road.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, we've had Dr. Mark Cucuzzella on, and many listeners have heard him talk about the properties of the ligaments and the tendons and the musculature. Everything has an elastic property, and when it stretches, it can return. And to get that, to catch that stretch and return, that free energy you're talking about, it's that cadence of 180. And so that's that. You stated it beautifully with jumping rope. Jumping slow is an effort, but jumping at the right frequency is a nice little bounce and takes a lot less effort. And so I really like the way that you describe that, Mayo.
Well, also, you know, you never jump rope on your heels, do you?
No, you don't. No.
Yeah. See, that's another point what we can make with that. And seems to be normal landing on your heels when you're running.
Yeah, and I feel like there's something else going on with you, like with this barefoot thing in the 100 miles or 200 miles, because you are so strong on the later, like, you know, the last third. It's crazy. Like, you're just relaxed and chilling, and you look like you just finished, like, you just look fresh when you finish a 100-miler. There's got to be something to that with the barefoot running in the form and the free energy return, et cetera, cadence.
Well, there is something to everything. But like I said, like, unfortunately, I can say, like, I'm winning races all around, and this is a proof of something, right? But it works for me. I can see my running change drastically, and I'm going with it, you know?
Hey,
and
I want to submit a comment about winning races because, well, one, I haven't won any races. So I'll be happy to make this comment to represent those of us that haven't stood on the podium. And that is, a win is really becoming a more efficient runner, more effective at what we're doing, and to execute well. I mean, that's winning a race, you know, starting and creating a plan and following it and having it go just like you had hoped it to go and planned it to go. That's a win. You know, you can stand proudly at the end and say, I nailed that thing, just because you put it together. Now, that's a race win. So Michelle, I might have a win or two, but not listed at the top of any list as finisher.
Well, I know you can't. You had some solid runs, like you were second at Headlands and you finished States in 20 hours. Like, you're not sandbagging these things like you say you are. I mean,
well, we do best we can, right? But I'm just saying, you know, sometimes we judge something to be said on performance purely, and that's the kind of world we're living. If you don't have the proof, then what are you saying? It's not necessarily true, unfortunately. But I got some good finishes.
Absolutely, you do. Let's talk about Mexico, you guys. You went down to Mexico to run what, Caballo Blanco race? Give us some comments on that, because I'm intrigued. And try to sell me on wanting to go down there next year and run that thing. So who wants to lead with it? Michelle, why don't you start, and then Mayo, you pick up.
I can start, but this is Mayo's thing. Like, this was a dream come true for him, and just like how this whole thing started with, you know, Barefoot Ted asking us to be ambassadors and inviting us down there, and Mayo reading this book years and years ago, and it just all came to life.
It's not just me. This is not, like, you know, it's not about me, but everybody who read Born to Run and get kick out of the book, right? It's like how many books you read in your life and eventually you can become part of it. It's not that many of them, right? Like, you're reading this book of all these Indians and it's all like super, like, seems to be far away and imaginary and so difficult, and suddenly, like, you know, you get inspired and you made it to the ultra and you're happy and you're running and you're wearing these sandals and everything going the way you want, and boom, you are in Urique and you're running with Tarahumaras. You know, like, that's just
incredible.
It's something else. Like, I didn't go there to race at all. I was just happy to be there and be part of the story. And actually, lucky us, like, going there with Barefoot Ted and all these people who actually was a part of the book, that's just making it completely another level, because, you know, I really felt like I'm reliving the book some weird way, maybe.
Yeah, but what we saw down there was just incredible. Like, during the race, the guys running in the jeans, the ladies running in the flowered shirts and skirts, and with these, like, super, just, you know, I don't know, those sandals made of just plastic and kicking ass. And there's one chick right now that's flying around. She's Rara Marie, and winning these races, just like running with such a minimalistic, you know, barefoot running, natural movement. Like, it's cool to see these people, like, really strong and kicking ass.
Well, running, it's about running, I guess. So whatever goes, right? And it's kind of, it might change your perspective when, once you go there and you see how simple that is. You get these Indians, they never train, they just live their lives there, take care of the crop, whatever they're growing. They don't mm-hmm. train that much, and here they are kicking ass. And, you know, I'm running, like, I'm an ultra runner. I got that feeling. I got that, like, I belong in this group of people who run ultras and train and kick ass. And here I am on the mile 30, and there is still a lady in the long dress and some weird footwear. It's still ahead of me, you know? I'm like, what I'm doing here? Why are you ahead of me? And, yeah, it's happening. Another thing is they cutting course a little bit, so it's kind of hard to be competitive, because some people I pass probably 5-6 times and they never run around me, so they know the shortcuts, but that's just part of the story there, you know?
Yeah, the native side trails.
Yeah.
Hey, so maybe we're misled. We don't have to run 120 miles a week to run a ultra distance. These guys are just tending uh-huh. to their business and then line up, pull their skirts up, and put on their tire sandals, and then go out there and run 50 miles. And they just expect it to be done because those before them have done it, and before them have done it, so they go out and do it. Where with our tribe, we go, ooh, wait a minute, we need to run, you know, 50 miles before we do 100. You know, we've got all these rules in place. Yeah. And their rules are different. They have different rules.
Yeah, and they were absolutely running with nothing. I mean, just so simple. Just they're just running. It's just amazing, these people. I'm so addicted. I can't wait to go back there. I loved it.
Yeah, it was a really good experience. And they just run from village to village. That's how they go. And that's the way, that's the lifestyle they have. They run places. We don't run, we drive, we're sitting in the office. So mm-hmm. if you want to accomplish something, I guess you got to train for it. Otherwise, we are just, you know, kind of dumb white people sitting on our asses all day long. So you can't expect much.
Well, the energy was so good at the race, right? Everyone's like yelling Animo and Kiraba and all kinds of cool stuff. Like, we were definitely the minority, but wow, what an experience. Like, so positive.
Yeah.
Do you know what those words mean, Michelle? Or maybe they were insulting you by yelling those things. What were they yelling?
We are one.
Kiraba.
Oh, we are one. I didn't
we
know.
Are one.
We are. Yes.
Yeah, nice.
That you guys need that in your podcast more often.
We need that in the intro. That's good stuff. Yeah.
Karima.
Ramas and Kiraba.
And circle of sharing is Karima.
All right. I can see we need to do some quick editing and get some of this stuff in there. That's good. I like it. So you recommend going to this race and experiencing it. If you're an ultra runner and you've done some races and put some bibs on, this is completely different and unique.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Like, if you're mm-hmm. competitive, and you might be a little bit disappointed because, like I said, there wasn't many people there who actually run the entire course. I got a feeling. Mm-hmm. I've really seen people coming from left and right and disappearing in the woods and all kind of stuff, but mm-hmm. We went there to run the course, and we did. And, you know, I finished probably somewhere in the 60th place mm-hmm. just because. And I didn't really go there race and didn't expect that much. But I was maybe top 10 white guy, you know. Like, everything mm-hmm. was kind of shifted. Like, a lot of local people was in that 60th places for whatever reason. And, yeah, it's a great race. And Yeah.
My we don't have white guy category at races. we use some age groups maybe and female male, but no white guy.
I know
they frown on that around here.
We was checking it out, like, hey, what place are finished? How many places and which gringo I am and all that stuff. That was a part of the gig there.
That's good. Hey, tell me about the trail markings themselves. So some of the locals knew some shortcuts, but if we went there, do they use ribbons? Do they pound stuff on the ground? What do they use?
Yeah, they're ribbons. Like normal stuff. It was really very, very well marked, I think. And
yeah, plenty of aid. It was clear. It was very hot there. That's what killed me.
So, Michelle, you pull up to an aid station. What do you see? Some Oreo cookies, some M&Ms, some watermelon.
No,
what do you see?
None of that. You see a big kind of thing of pinoli and a lot of bottled water. There's oranges cut up, just like fruit cut up. It's a pretty simple kind of aid station. You don't really see the typical, like, American fare, like the M&Ms and the chips and all that junk.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Good. Mm-hmm. All that suited your stomach well. You found there was no issue with the aid.
No issues at all.
What?
Well, let's
I
move
didn't
from.
Really...
What? Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I just said I just grabbed a water bottle and move on. Like I wasn't really using aid station that much. I got some stuff with me from Canada, so I was just sticking to that stuff I know basically.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move from Mexico up to Canada. Sinister Seven, that's coming up for you guys.
Yeah.
Tell us about the Canadian racing scene, because there's a lot of American runners, at least as we're speaking to this group about above and below. What's unique and different about Canadian running?
It's harder.
Who wants to? Harder.
It's more beautiful.
I don't know. I find you know. I run only a bunch of races in the States, but I find it way much more competitive. Like, you know, maybe Canadian races are more technical and single track. It's less groomed, if groomed at all. Like, it's pretty rough terrain you're running through. And there is, you know, like if you're running in the rain, then it's a cold rain. It's not nice rain in California, which feels refreshing. Like, you need that jacket to put on and you're going to be freezing. And when it's hot, then you're cooking and it's like mountains, running in the mountains, you know, but I find it more of a, some sort of a little bit kind of survival ultra running when you walk a lot of hills and you got to be quick with power walks and all that stuff. Then you're running flats and like me racing in the States, was just, you know, out of the gate, everybody running crazy pace. I was surprised, like, how quick that is there. Maybe, like, in the States, there is more that professional runners or semi-professional runners. In Canada, it's more based on kind of hobby people doing it after work. And it's, like, I don't really know any professional Canadian runner in the ultra scene anyway. Mm-hmm. There is a bunch of people here, like, Andy Reid, totally kick ass, and the guy, he's in medical field, he's a doctor, so he have a full-time job. I have a lot of respect for that guy when it comes to mountain running. He's just older guy too. Well, sorry, Andy, but he's older guy and he kick ass. He's out there. And then we got
Adam
bunch
Campbell.
Of local. Yeah, Adam is solid. Like, everybody knows Adam. He's coming back nicely, recovering.
Right.
And but Adam also, he's not professional runner, I guess. He got his he's a lawyer, he works full time or part time maybe, I don't know. Like, I really don't know anybody who is running for a living around here. Yeah. So it's
so
maybe
Michelle,
like yeah.
Yes.
No, finish your thought and then I want to hit a question to Michelle.
Oh, I just want to say it's probably maybe like running ultras in the States 50 years ago or something like that, you know, like a nice community of like a hobby amateur kind of weekend warriors, kick ass, trying to do the best kind of running here.
I absolutely agree, and I think that's the vibe that really attracts me to that, because it reminds me of what it was like when I first started in ultras. It really feels like it's very similar, except the courses are just so much harder.
Yeah, and that's what you said. You said more technical. I kind of cut you off earlier. More technical, but
steeper.
Beautiful. So steeper. Tell us about what we might find that attracts you to the Canadian scene. Besides the community.
Oh, just the mountains. The mountains in general. I mean, I feel like Yosemite is around here. You know, I grew up there, like went there 3 times a summer, running and hiking, backpacking. And that was my favorite place pretty much on earth until I went to Canada. And it's just absolutely incredible, like how close Mayo is to these, like, so many different mountains. Just, I mean,
yeah, but I gotta say, like, we have to say that the ultra running here in Alberta or BC, I believe, it doesn't really represent the beauty of Canada, you know, because it's just hard to manage aid station, I guess, or maybe some permits with the national parks and all that stuff. So if you come here for vacation, you can run, like, incredible stuff. When it comes to the racing, it's a lot of stuff what more likely accessible and that kind of stuff. I don't feel like stuff what we're racing here really represent the best of Canada. Like, there is trails what just mind-blowing, and you can go forever on them.
Right, and there's not a lot of races there. And it's a very, very short season because your winter is so long. So, like, for example, how do you train in the winter when, like, Canada is frozen over?
Well, you do skimo, or you run treadmill, or you bundle up and you go outside and fight for your life in minus 40.
Hmm. Right.
That's how we run.
So you think doing skimo and being forced to take some downtime is ends up being less injuries for runners because they do a lot of different things out here, say in California. There may be, you know, I don't know if there's a day we can't run as long as you're, you know, agreeable to get wet. So we don't really ever have a time off where we can remove ourselves, but you have real seasons. Do you think that there's an advantage to that?
Well, it could be, and it depends kind of, I guess, what you like to do, you know? Like, I love to do skimo. And if I would have more winter, I would probably give up on running and just do skimo much again, because it's amazing climbing the hills and then you skiing down. It's really, really fun. And I'm actually looking forward to it. And then transition from skimo into running, it's tough because I feel like my legs have some sort of a power. I'm good with power walking, climbing hills, that stuff. But I don't really have a lot of endurance for flat running. Like, I have to get those legs back. You know, it's not easy just jump in. Some guys manage, some doesn't. But a lot of, like, Dave Proctor, it's another amazing guy around here. He runs mostly kind of flattish stuff, I guess. He was Guinness. Yeah, well, he runs, like, incredible stuff, but he doesn't ski or he doesn't do skimo. He just stick with the running all winter long. So that transition for him, it's completely different than for me or Adam Campbell or Andy Reid and people who ski more, probably. But I just gonna talk for myself, I guess. Like, I'm really enjoying it, and depends what you like. If you are a runner, you're just gonna be complaining about cold and I'm not able to run because that's your kind of lifestyle you want to live, then you suffer. But if you just find a way and other options how to make the best out of it, then you just go with the skimo or cross-country skiing or fat biking or skiing in general, and whatever you can make the best out of the snow.
Let me ask a question here about skimo. For those that are listening and that are going skimo, you know, and they're not near Google, they can't look it up. Mayo, you become our Google. You are now Google for us, and we're typing in skimo, and what pops up is what you're going to describe. What is skimo?
Okay, skimo is shortcut for ski mountaineering. So you basically approaching the alpine terrain in the winter where it's covered with the snow, and you can really access it on your feet because you would be in the deep snow. It's just no way to get there. So I guess you could have options to be on the snowshoes or you are on the skis. And the skis, what we use for Skimo, was short, 160 centimeters long, lightweight racing skis with a super light bindings and the boots where you can switch from skiing into walking mode. And you basically moving fast as possible uphill, and then you switching into skiing mode, and you skiing down the valleys and the mountains, what we have around here. And there is races around the world, what Skimo races are. There is multi-day races, there is short course, sprint, all kind of categories you can actually compete in. And just, you know, I got to say, when I'm running ultras, my heart rate is probably averaging about that 140, 150, if I push it 170. But when I'm racing Skimo, there is almost 3 hours for me effort on like almost 200. Like it's all in, like you go in. Yeah, you go in all in. And, you know, like I'm an ultra runner again. Like I kind of think like, you know, I'm not that bad, but the guys in the Skimo racing, they beating me by hours. It's insane. like how good they are. It's insane, man.
Yeah. Wow. That was a good search for us. That's good. Michelle, have you ever done Skimo?
More than Google.
I would love to. I think I would suffer pretty bad, but yeah, I would love to do that. I don't think it's very big in California, but yeah, definitely.
2 years ago, there was a bunch of people from Edmonton, and they said, would you take us for a one-day Skimo trip? And I said, sure. They rent the gear. They are ultra runners, great shape people, and we went. And actually, the part of climbing mountains went very, very well. Guys was moving quickly. They find a way, operate the gear. It wasn't anything hard about it, but the going down, that's where the issues come, because you're really skiing backcountry. There is no groomed trails. There is nothing. You kind of have to, I guess, come from that background to be a skier and then approach the Skimo, because the climbing seems to be easy for ultra runners. Well, not easy, but definitely catching quick and doable.
Yeah, I think that sounds great. I think that'd be a great way to step back from running, but still build yourself stronger. So when you re-enter running, you could actually improve and not have run for 4 months, and then all of a sudden realize, man, I became a better runner because I've been training hard in Skimo. Is that
because your breathing and heart rate is better?
Yeah, yeah, you're strong.
Could be, but just Killian lately was doing Skimo, and then he ran Everest twice, and now he's going into UTMB and all that stuff. So there is something about that, I guess.
Well, let's talk about Killian. I mean, what an amazing athlete. I mean, is he just breaking anybody's expectations of what's possible? He's just out there doing it.
Yeah, it's a lot of respect for that. And I really have respect for this because, you know, like I'm following this climbing stuff lately, and then, well, not lately, but all my life kind of involved in that. And I noticed there wasn't anything new happening, you know, like people was kind of doing the same thing, Everest and go there and oxygen and without oxygen and all that stuff. But like Uli Steck, unfortunately, he's not with us anymore, but he was pushing the boundaries far away. Then what Killian is up to, it's just insane. And Alex Honnold climbing the L Cup lately, free solo. That just, yeah, there is a lot of stuff happening lately. It's a great stuff to follow.
Yeah, yeah. I'll get rid of this pause for us.
Yeah, well, right. I don't believe you.
Wait, you're right. There is no editing, and I will not effort going back and finding this spot. So we've talked about Mexico. We've talked about Canada.
Can we talk about Lucky and poles?
Let's talk about running with poles.
Okay. Well, Lucky, we was just talking about the schemo. So when you're running these mountains with the schemo, with the poles in your hands, then you just leave the skis behind and you transition into running mountains with the Lechi poles. It's pretty easy for us over here, and you guys, I guess it's a little trickier, but yeah, it makes sense. Like, you proper your body forward in these hills with the poles. A lot of Europeans using poles seems to be working for them. It's a great way to actually gain some fitness, even, because you kind of full body is working.
Well, the Lechi poles have... Yes?
Yeah?
Go ahead, Michelle. No,
The Lechi poles have an amazing feature, the trigger shark, which is a direct power transmission, like superior power transfer, where you can click in and out in seconds. There's no lame strap. So when you two are running your 200 milers, there's not going to be any chafing, you know, from that strap, and just it's just better. I think, like, Don, what do you think? You just got a
Did you use Lechi's last year?
You just got a few. He used Black Diamond, right?
Did you?
Yeah, I used Black Diamond last year. So let's talk. Mm-hmm. We'll go over that. I'll give you my opinion of that of the glove and that trigger. What's it called? Trigger Shark.
Trigger Shark.
It's hard for me to get that term. But in that 200 mile, what percentage of people were using poles in that 200 mile race? Because many races around here exclude poles. No, Western States, no poles, and many other races kind of have followed suit, no poles. But the 200 poles are allowed. What percentage did you see using poles?
I would say probably like 90. A lot.
Yeah. At least 90%. And the 10%. Yeah, and 10%. So 10% didn't. And of those 10, they probably had them in their backpack or they wished they had them. There was just poles everywhere. And one of the things that I was really amazed at and fascinated about, because I didn't run with poles much before the 200. I mean, maybe once around REI to try them out. That counted as one. I tried them once on the trail. And then I probably tried them the morning of the race to make sure I still had them. That's about it. But I felt like I had an unfair advantage. I felt like I was a four-legged machine. Mm-hmm. And it really gave me a lot of confidence to now run this extra distance, because I was no longer a two-legged machine. I was four limbs all on the ground, and it really improves efficiency. It's so much, much more. It's incredible. I really love it.
Yeah, I use them as well. I have Lechi's last year, and they was working very well for me. But I have to say, you know, there is that spot there what you have to watch when you're using Lechi's or pools in general, and not to go from the running set of mind into walking set of mind, because like when everything is going bad for you, you just pull out the Lechi's and you are in your tiny little bubble and you kind of work legs and hands and you just going for it. But then there is a lot of runnable stuff and you just don't pay attention and you just walking and you pay attention to pulls and you are just become kind of a hiker instead of a runner. And there is a lot of time you could run and you just didn't, because this seems suddenly more natural and good. So even in the Tahoe, I have to watch kind of what I'm doing with those. I don't know if you have similar experience or not.
I started the race because it starts out with a hill. And so, you know, most of us that had poles were using poles. And I didn't know what I was going to do with them. Was I going to put them away? And they were, you know, they were quick to fold up. There wasn't an issue with that. But I ran all 205 miles with those poles. I never put them away. I just used them.
Oh.
And I enjoyed it. And there was a mechanical engineer early on the run talking about cyclic loading or some loading rate, or just he was telling me about even use them all the time, because even if you remove some of the weight off that limb, it really adds up over the course of the race. And I thought, well, I need something to help me pull through 205 miles here. I better keep the poles out. And so I used them the whole time and loved them.
Oh, great.
And look forward to using them again.
Sinister Seven. Yeah, Sinister Seven, the race, what we're going for, what we was talking about.
Yeah.
They're not allowed pacers, but you right. are allowed to use a pulse. So that's your pacer. Mm.
Yeah, like when we ran it 3 years ago, I saw everyone had pulls except for me, and I was like, what is this?
Well, I didn't have any back then. I just think it's mostly runnable, and I play kind of chess in Sinister Seven, and I know leg number, like, 1 and 2, I don't need a pulls. Probably right. not even 3, but you can use it. And then I take him for 4, 5, 6, and then I leave him there and I run leg 7. It's mostly downhill, so I don't need him there. So you can kind of, like, you know, play the game where you need him, where you don't.
Right.
Oh, so now I'm gonna speak to why I use them the whole time. Even running flats for me, I'd push myself along. I would go ahead and put them into the ground and push myself forward. I felt like I was on an escalator all the time. I was just being moved forward with my poles and climbing up hills. I would stab that pole right with that leg that was about to pull myself up, and I was just all four limbs full time. And downhills, it helped me with some loading of those knees and those quads. And I would say three uh-huh. different times saved me from a face plant. Typically oh. during 100 mile, I'll find myself on the ground at least once. But over that 200 miles, I never hit the ground once because there was just that half a second I needed, that extra touch out there really saved me. I'm a big believer in the poles.
Hmm.
So now that trigger shark thing you're talking about, pretty cool. You have a small glove that goes on the hand and you clip right into it, and you don't have just what Michelle called a lame strap. You don't have a lame strap. You're actually clicked into the top of this thing, and I'm looking forward to I've been training with it and really love it and look forward to using it at Bigfoot this year. I'm going to run Candace's other run, Bigfoot. So
I'm
going to go give that a go. Yeah.
And Lucky only makes pulls, so they know what they're doing.
Well, when I was back home in Slovakia doing skimo, like more like a backcountry skiing, which was 20, 25 years ago, we was already buying Leckys because they was just a brand what you really can rely on, you know, like a Black Diamond didn't even exist back then, I guess. Or maybe there was something mm-hmm. climbing gear, but they definitely didn't make any poles, and even the stuff what we was buying was aluminum. There wasn't carbon fiber such a thing back then. But Leckys, yeah, they probably, I don't know how long they are on the market, but all they do it's a poles. And if you see like some sort of a world champion skiing of any kind there, I guarantee you on the podium there is going to be somebody, if not all three people, holding Leckys above their head.
So now I'm going to jump in. Go ahead, Mayo.
I'm going to
jump in and be Scott Warr for a second because he's not here. Yeah. So I'm kind of channeling him in because he would want to take this moment to remind us that I was a skier and a ski instructor, and I would do an impression of Scott, but I can't even tell the difference between the two of us when I'm editing. So I think I'm fairly close to his voice. And he says, I was a skier, and I used to be a ski instructor, and I used to use Lucky poles years ago. So you guys are late to the scene. I knew about Lucky before you guys even knew about him. He would claim to be the first of the group to know about him. Scott likes to remind us that he was a ski instructor.
There you go.
I guess that'll – yeah, he likes to talk about that. So how about you, Mayo? Are you going to do another 200? Did you like the distance? Are you attracted to another one?
Absolutely love it.
Why?
Unfortunately, why? Because
why?
Stronger as it goes. It's crazy.
Well, the Tahoe, I didn't feel like I have a, you know, good race. I didn't really feel like it. Like last year, I didn't overrace. I didn't overtrain. Like I felt like I'm going into the race very well prepared mentally, physically, on so many levels. I was looking forward to it. I was just stoked about to go there and do my best. And suddenly something, I don't know what happened, but everything went wrong for me. I was puking 50 Ks in, completely exhausted, slept there somewhere in the woods a couple hours. Then I heard people running by, you know, from like top 10. I made it to 90th place or something like that. And then fix my problems, make it back to the 7th place. Then I roll my ankle and I was babysitting kind of that foot. And then I lose my another knee. And on those pulls, just somehow made it to the finish, you know. So, yeah, I really love that kind of thing because that's kind of like what ultra running means to me. It's when you leave it all there, you know. Like somehow, I don't know. Like when I read this book, Born to Run Again, and they was talking about ultras. That's what I was attracted to when you go for the fight. Like, you go on the mission, and you got to complete what you started, and you have to fight for it. And now people finishing ultras in 13, 14 hours?
Yeah.
Crazy, man. Like, I'm never going to be that fast, so I have to look for something what I actually enjoy and where is my chance to do something. So it's got to be something tough, and I guess being that fighter, and that's kind of where I see myself to go in. So I like 200, and I wish I can run like 400 or something, you know. I just make it happen. That would be cool.
Well, we'll have to talk to Candace about doubling this thing and making it 400. And the thing about a 200 is you can't make a mistake. I mean, the mistakes that you make are devastating. You know, with 100, you can power your way for the last 30 or, you know, wherever the mistake was made. But in 200, if you make a mistake at mile 70, you've got another 130 to go. Yeah. So you've got to be smart.
That's how I feel like it. Like, we started well, everything was going. I was in position where I want to be. Like, I'm usually closing up later. So I'm not freaking out when people are out there. I just do my thing, right? But like 50K, that was like 6 hours in, and I'm completely done. Like, I couldn't eat, I couldn't drink. I'm done. 6 hours in the race, what's supposed to be 3 days long, you know?
Right,
like,
right.
I started losing that game pretty quickly, and then, like, what makes me run, I guess, or continue was just, it's a loop around the lake, and I wanted to run around that lake. I didn't want to go home and leaving an airplane, looking down on that lake, and no, I didn't make a loop.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, okay, well, it's going to be shitty, but whatever the takes, I just going to kind of, you know, made it to the hospital, I guess. Just leave it all there.
Well, you finished 8th place overall in 69 hours.
Yeah, but I just really didn't have a good race. Was a lot of fighting, like stuff what I usually doesn't do when I'm racing, you know, was all there.
Well, so now you have UTMB on the horizon in 2.5 months, and that's 100. And
yeah, that's super competitive though. Like, that's exactly something scary, you know?
Right. So you're using Sinister 7 as kind of a run, like, to kind of get ready for UTMB.
Well, some, you know, like, happens to be, for whatever reason, I'm super busy in the work lately, and my miles are not exactly where I want it to be, so it's kind of lame to say that I'm going to use 100-miler, like, a training run into something else, because, you know, there is volunteers there is people who make the race happen, and I just always treat races with respect. I would never say, oh, I'm just here to bag my miles and I don't care about your race, because it's that's not right thing to do. You should always leave it all out there, what you got in you. But yeah, I'm going in a Sinister, and I want to run, you know, best I can, but it's definitely not that A race for me this year, for sure.
Well, it's going to be a good race, 10th anniversary.
Yeah, I know. I didn't want to run it because this is my fourth time, like, year after year after year.
You mean finishing? Okay.
Yeah, I ran it 3 times back to back. And I said, Brian, the race director, there is no way I'm running it again 4 times. I need a break, kind of. But then he texted me later, a couple months ago, and he said, what do you think would attract more people running it solo? And I said, probably a bell buckle. So he made a bell buckle, and I ran it three times, and I don't have a bell buckle, so then I sign up because I want my bell buckle.
Right.
You know, we need to work on your motivating factors. You don't want to leave in a plane looking at the lake. You don't want to not have a belt buckle. You're pretty easily swayed.
Yeah, I know, but that's what ultra is all about.
Yeah, that's sinister. Hey, they give you like a bottle of wine, and like most people like that, but Maya wants the buckle. He doesn't care about that wine.
Actually, I can show you something here, Dawn. Like, the people listening, they obviously not gonna see what I have to show you here.
I'll describe it the best I can.
Okay, this is what you get in when you're running Canadian Losso.
That's like a 20-pound rock.
That's nice.
It's a rock.
It's a 20-pound rock, and it's engraved, and it says Losso. And 100 Mile Ultra, and it has this time of 18:39. It looks great. Yeah, I would finish a race. I would pull myself out of an aid station tent and finish for that rock.
That's right?
Nice. Different awards in Canada. So, Don, are you going to race in Canada, Don?
Or are you?
For a rock, I would race, yes. I'd go to Canada. And I would race for a rock. And I like races that have a lot of climbing to them. I do enjoy that because it's I don't like running. I like climbing and running downhills. Yeah.
Same here. We are on the same page.
I like running.
Because 3 years ago, Michelle said, you should come and race Avalon. That was like a Catalina Island 50 miler.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's beautiful. You're running between buffaloes and all that stuff. And I'm like, all right, sounds fun to me. And then everybody was saying, oh, man, it's so runnable. You're going to enjoy it. And I'm like, ooh. Really? Runnable? I think I pull out something like 8 hours on that course.
It was high sevens, like 7:55. And it was pouring rain, tons of mud. And you're running with no shirt, and everyone else was freezing, and I'm borrowing jackets from random dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, let's talk about returning to races. I mean, it becomes a burden returning to a race over and over again of comparing yourself to yourself and going to a fresh venue. Let's talk about that. Michelle, you lead this discussion because you have 80 wins, 25 course records. So you've ran a few races. Talk to us about returning to a similar race.
Well, yeah, it's crazy because I have been, I'll just say for Javelina. I've won Javelina. I've DNF'd at Javelina. I've finished, 21 hours, whatever, mid-pack Javelina, all over the place. And you don't want to, keep going back and keep, doing worse and worse and worse. Or, I mean, there's a spot where, and also, where's your just excitement about the course? Like, how can you be excited about going back, 6, 7, 10 times to the same course? You just kind of lose interest. So that's why I kind of like racing in Canada and doing different stuff, because I've done so much of the US stuff. But comparing yourself to yourself, how can you have a course record 1 year and win, and then 1 or 2 years later just drop out? It happens, because we're humans, and your body is never ever ever the same ever. You're gonna have good years, good months, bad months, injuries, but yeah, you can't. It's hard to stay totally consistent and keep improving. I think it's kind of impossible to just keep moving up and up if you're going to be an ultra runner for 20 plus years. Stuff happens. I don't think you can just keep. Yeah.
So how do you manage that mentally? How do you wrap your mind around the fact that you were first mid-pack DNF? I mean, How do you stay strong and optimistic when that happens?
Not always, even if in that order, there's been races where I would run a 50 miler, have some major problems, say, for example, peeing blood or hyponatremia, and then I'm like, screw that, I was so mad at myself, and then go back the next year and win. But it's also been, you know, different, where I would go and win and then go back and DNF, which is totally embarrassing, and then people's like, what's wrong with you? But yeah, it's not fun. So I just kind of now like to seek out new races. Like, that's why that Mexico was so invigorating and so exciting and amazing to me. I have nothing to compare it to, no pressure. It was just, like, beautiful. So I'm kind of going to stick to that and just kind of try to keep doing new races. Like, I would love to do Candace's Moab in the future, some 200, and just different things. Because it's not, huh. I don't want to just keep comparing myself to myself. You know, I love mountains. I love running. I want to just keep having fun and do the best I can do.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess so. You know, me, like, I'm new to this game. Well, new. Five, 6 years running ultras, really. But, like, we don't have that many here. So if you want to be in that game and be competitive, you're kind of running the same thing more or less over and over, I guess. And so far, I'm like, always faster. Like, all my times are dropping down constantly, but I'm not really placing anyway. Like, everybody is running faster for whatever reason, which is weird. Mm-hmm. Like, I dropped 2 hours from the last year finish, and I still finished fourth place. Yeah, and it's super hard because I remember where I was, like, a year ago, and I'm thinking, well, I'm here now. I'm 2 hours ahead of the game. I'm good. Like, I'm just going to roll with it and all that stuff. And I don't know everybody who is running. Like, I know most of the guys around here, but, like, top three was, you know, unknown to me. Like, a lot of good people wasn't in the place where they should be. And a lot of people we don't know, they just kick ass. So, yeah, it's hard. And also, like, Lost Soul, that one where the rock come from, you know, I run it twice, and then I went for third time, I think.
Yeah.
And there is a 50K loop, which you're running three times in the one race. So you're running over coulees in the prairie, like super steep hills, short one, climbing up, climbing down, running down, and then it's a, like a stretch back home. And you got to do three loops, you know. So I run it twice, back to back. And then after that, like my second time was a second place finish. And I was thinking, like, I could probably run better. So I run one loop, decent time. And in the middle of the second loop, for whatever reason, I just, like, call it a quits, you know? Like, I lost that journey to see new places or experience new things or whatever happened to me. Like, I was completely fine. Like, I was tired, you know? But, like, I didn't have injuries. I have nothing was wrong with me completely. I just catch myself thinking for 3 hours, like, what the hell I'm doing here? Like, I don't want to be here. Like, this is just, like, I'm running it just to run it for whatever reason, you know? And I made it to another aid station, and I said, yeah, well, I'm done. And everybody was like, why? Like, you good position. Everything is going well. And I'm like, I don't want to be here. Like, I don't want to run this thing. So I just quit. And I said, everybody, the way it was, and a lot of my friends were surprised, like, dude, like, you should finish. And I'm like, no, I want to run. So I went home, and, you know, I got a bunch of races where it was DNFs for whatever reason. I think one more, and that one really hurts. But this one, I never regret it. I just hit that point when, like, I don't think we should be pushing ourselves to do something what we don't want to do. Like, all this ultra running is based on, like, whatever you're searching in your life or your soul or whatever, it should be kind of filling, not emptying me, you know? Like, I shouldn't be running something what just make me empty like a person. If it's not there, then it's not there. Screw it.
Like, because you feel okay, obligated to run it or something.
Mm.
Okay, I want to say this. If you're in the middle of a race right now and you're trying to argue with yourself, should I stop or should I not? Don't listen to these comments, because you want to finish if you need to finish. So don't let this lend to a early stop. But how do you guys put yourself together after a DNF? Because you just both admitted to, yeah, I had some DNFs. How do you protect your own ego? How do you still have confidence in yourself as a runner after a DNF? or does it affect you at all? I'm really interested in listening to this comment. How do you stay on top after a stop?
Well, this was a situation of race which I run three times, right? Mm-hmm. When I ran that race first time, and I was like, that was my first ultra when it comes to 100 miles after that 24 hours kind of thing, what he was talking about, right? Mm-hmm. So,
right.
It took me 28 hours to finish it, and I leave it out there all. Like, that was one of the first 100 miles I ever run in my life, and I leave it there. And then I run it second time, and I finish second, and then I run it third time, and I just didn't find a reason. Like, the way I saw it in the moment was, okay, I'm not going to do better than last year. I'm not going to win it. I'm just going to finish, you know. And I already finished, and I already did better, so I lose that kind of, like, I just feel like I felt in the moment like putting energy in the lost bottle already, you know. Like, if you are a competitive athlete and you're going out there and you want to run 100 miler and win, and you realize halfway through there is no way you're going to do anything, then you might just bag it and take it like a long, good training run, and you're looking forward to race again and something else, and that's just the way it is. But if you are running your first ultra or new course, what you never run and whatever, uh-huh. and you have a chance to finish it and fight for it, then I would, like me in the Tahoe 200, right? That was the same thing. Like, I knew I'm not going to do any damage anymore, but I leave it all out there. Like, I was motivated to see what behind that bend, what behind that river, what behind that mountain. It's just like, it's journey. And you don't gonna quit that journey, because that's what we're looking for. You sign up for ultra running. It's not easy. It's never gonna be. Whatever you do, how much you train, it's always gonna be a challenge. So I'm not gonna pull, you know, out of the challenge. I'm happy to be part of it, and that's what it is. But if you set a goal and the goal is gone, then I don't know. I don't know if it's worth it to put so much energy in it. I don't know. What do you think, Michelle?
To finish? Well, I mean, the first thing that came to my mind was Badwater, because I finished it in 2010. And when we went back a few years ago, I dropped. And I feel like when you were just explaining that about when you're at a race you've previously finished or done okay at, and then you're there and you know that that's just slipped away and you're in a really bad spot. I mean, yeah, I DNF'd at Badwater the last time, but I wasn't super, like, devastated or crazy hard on myself. Like, I don't think I ever am. Like, if there's a bad race, there's always another race. It doesn't mean your worth as a human being, you know, is defined by your last race or a race. You got to just, like, learn from that. And I always come out better, like, learning from my mistakes. I think we talked about that previously, but yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel good. You're kind of ashamed, and it's like a surprise. It didn't work out how you wanted, and you put a lot of time. You also, like, have other people that are putting in their time, and, like, you don't want to disappoint or let other people down, but this is, like, running 135 miles, like, stuff happens, and you know that going into these kind of, like, crazy events. So, I mean, you just got to do your best, but sometimes, like, that's going to happen. I've been running these for, like, 16 years. So, yeah, I have some pretty bad DNFs, but it's not going to kill me, and I'm still going to race and enjoy it and love running.
Yeah. You know, I've had some, and we all have, we've had some bad training runs. It just happens. You know, we just go out there, and it doesn't come together. You don't know if you have some kind of a flu or a cold that's underlying. You don't know if it's because you haven't had sleep. You don't know if it's because you've been training too much. You don't know why, but it's just a bad day. And then you go back and you go back home, and that's just the way it is. And that same day could fall on race day. You just hope it doesn't, but you could have one of those mysterious days that just is a bad training day that happened to be race day, and you can't beat yourself up anymore than you do on your same training run. You don't feel that bad because you don't finish that. So I think that's a good context, and I think you guys described it very well and answered that question for me and probably for others that are listening. So I think that's good. Michelle, this is your show. Do you have anything else you want to bring up? Have we covered all the bases?
Well, Mayo and I think, are looking forward to running Sinister 7. And this is more like his thing, like UTMB's coming up. And then I have actually another race in Canada. I'm going to be running the Blackspur 100K. That's put on by the same race director, Brian, that puts on Sinister 7. So I'm excited about that, too. That's in August. So
yeah, that's a it's a pretty race.
And Maya was second in that one, running it barefoot in Lunas.
Well, I ran it in the sandals 2 years ago, and I got still second fastest time on that course. And Ray's been running a bunch of times. They didn't beat it. Andy Reid have a course record. I was chasing him. He ran very well. I don't think we pull out some like super incredible fast times, but I think we did all right. And it's a very pretty race. Blackspur Ultra, check it out. It's a two loops, and you're running three different kind of legs. So you're always coming back to the same spot eventually, where it's like a headquarters, start to finish area. And every loop, it's kind of different. One of them is more of a like an alpine. Another one, you're running more foresty and of all some beautiful big boulders. And third one is almost like a sandy, almost like California trail, that kind of stuff. So they are really all three of them are really different and kind of clicks together. It's a pretty cool race.
Hey, Don, that could be your cool down race right after Bigfoot.
Yeah, and for the record, I'm running, since you've run barefoot in your Lunas, I'm running barefoot in my Ultras, Bigfoot 200 this year. So I'm there a barefoot runner too, but wrapping them up in the Ultra. And well, it is kind of a barefoot experience, right? I'm by your definition, I'm zero drop. I have some protection for the sharp rocks, and I protected the front of my toe in case I kick something. So I feel like I'm very barefoot-like in my Ultras.
By definition of Lee Saxby, the first go to shape, which you got with Ultra. Then second goes the zero drop, which you have with Ultra. But what you're missing is proper reception because you don't have a lot of feedback from that foam down under. Yeah. But yeah, you're there.
And he's
two out of three.
A
I'm
lot
getting
of
there.
Velcro happening on those Ultras. Hey.
Velcro?
On my MT
Velcro.
Kings. On my MT Kings. They put a little Velcro on the MT Kings. You got to check them out. They're good stuff. Hey, Michelle, are we ready to wrap up? Why don't you close this up for us?
Thanks,
who is choosing song for this one?
Oh, do you want to choose Michelle, the song, Mayo?
Yeah, I totally. I have something going on.
Okay, let's do that.
Ready?
What's the song?
I will let you know afterwards, and it's going to be a surprise. It's
all right,
a running
cue
song.
It up. I'll put it in there. This closing outro is by Mayo, so enjoy.
Mayo, if people want to follow you on social media, where would they find you?
Well, I guess the best way would be on Instagram, and it's go at MAJO Calgary. That's where you find me easy.
Nice, nice. I'll make sure I put that in. I'll put that in Scott's show notes, which means I'll actually have to do it. So this will be a different type of show notes. It'll be abbreviated. People will really be able to see what strong work he does when they look at my stuff. So at that point, let's just say go out and run.
Moss.
All right.
I woke up this morning. I said to myself, should I laugh or should I cry? When I woke up this morning, I said to myself, should I laugh or should I cry? It's a beautiful day.